Access number 30635, Mr. Doug Bone, Reel 9. Now, what happened when you got back to Seoul? I mean, did you stay in that area long? It's about November 51, you're not quite sure, but...
Well, we were only there long enough. We had previously handed over all our vehicles and equipment to the 5th Royal Inniskillen Dragoon Guards.
Now, was that a big job?
No, it wasn't. It was just by virtue of the fact that one of the tanks, which I previously talked about, being on top of a hill, we just said, well, there's the key. It's all yours. Obviously, we had to do a kit inspection and make sure everything was there, because they were taking charge of it. But it was literally like that. We just threw the key at them and said, carry on. We got back to Seoul, and where a transit camp had been built. And we cleaned ourselves up, had a good bath, and generally prepared ourselves for getting back on the boat to go home.
So, just routine in Seoul?
Yes.
And what about...
I can't think of any time scale that we were there, but...
So what about the trip back?
We then went to Pusan and got on the ship, and we came back on the Cunard RMS Georgic, which had been taken off the North American run to come to Korea to pick us up. The crew of which weren't very happy because all the stewards were aboard, the hairdressers were aboard, and they never made any money. They never made any tips at all out of us, because we virtually didn't have any money.
Now, what were conditions like on the Georgia?
Well, they were good. They were very good. A lot better than obviously on a troop ship.
Well, did you actually have sharing cabins or what?
I can't really recall what the accommodation was.
Anything about the trip back then?
Well, the trip back was very enjoyable because we didn't have very, very little to do. When we went out on the ferry, we had to take in Spud Bashan and general cleaning fatigues on board the ship, but coming back home, we didn't.
So not much to do?
Not a lot to do.
And do you remember anything about the route? It go anywhere interesting? Or?
We stayed up, we stopped at Singapore coming back, and we stopped at Aden coming back.
Remember anything about them?
Singapore was quite pleasant, but Aden, we were just in the start of the Suez Crisis, so we weren't allowed off the ship coming back in Aden. It just stopped to refuel and fill up water. And likewise, when we came back through Port Said, we just kept going.
So you did come back through the
We
the
came
canal.
Back through the canal, but the ship, we never stopped, simply because of the Suez situation. It was just about to start, or just to flare out the first time, really.
So what,
and then we came back and we landed in Liverpool.
And when would that be, roughly? Was it before or after Christmas? Or?
It was after Christmas.
In January, then?
Yeah.
And so did you get any sort of a reception when you got back?
Well, there was a lot of family were there, you know, northern troops that lived in the northern area, their family were on the deck, on the dockside, rather. And I can't recall whether there was a civic reception or not, but it could well have been in Liverpool. We then got on a troop train and came all the way back to, well, the docks, the train stopped in Perham Down in Tidworth, really. Luggershaw, to be correct.
So you went back to Tidworth camp again? Or
into a camp on Perham Down, yeah.
You know its name?
No, I can't recall its name.
And how did you all feel having got back?
Well, I can, one thing I can remember, getting off the train, because she came all, we got on, I don't know what time we got on the train, but it took us all day to get back across country down to Luggershaw. And we got off the train, and whether it was the colonel or the squadron leader or what, said, well, we've got to do this properly. So he marched us all the way from Luggershaw station into Perham Down as a regiment. And I can remember going up over the little bridge that goes to Perham Down. There was a pub on the right hand side, and we just dropped out of the parade, went in the pub, made a pint, and then caught the rest of the regiment up.
And no one noticed?
Nobody even noticed. And well, if they did notice, they never bothered. And we were there only one night, and then we came home on disembarkation leave.
Now, what was it like on leave after, I mean, you'd been away on, active service. How did everyone respond?
I came back here, and people were, interested to know what I'd done and where I'd been and what have you. And I can recall walking through this village in January in shirt sleeves with my sleeves rolled up. And one woman in particular said, where did you get that shirt from, Doug? And, well, you don't know, but I said, well, we've been living in zero, I suppose is the right word to use, temperatures for a long time. We've got used to it. This is warm, really. And everybody in the village were walking with overcoats on. That always stuck in my mind, this woman.
And were people were pleased to see you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So then, after leave?
After leave, we went straight back to Germany. Went back to Lüneburg.
So you just report, you were only at Perham Down for very briefly?
Yes, whilst we were home, the advance party had previously left Korea ahead of us. Prepared the barracks in Perham Down for the main party and had their leave, and by the time we got there they were back from their leave, and they were going off then to Germany as an advance party again.
Now, where in Germany were we going to? Lüneburg?
Lüneburg. Heath.
Did it have a name, the barracks or camp?
Well, it was a cavalry barracks in Lüneburg.
And what was it like when you... So you went out there in January as well, or did it drifted into February?
Well, drifted into February then. I think we had a month, 6 weeks leave.
Now, what was it like out there then?
Well, we took over from the Royal Scots Greys. That's who we took over from. And bearing in mind that we were the only cavalry regiment that had seen active service since 1945, or the only tank regiment. And we took over, as I say, from the Scots Greys, and all their tanks were in the tank park, all in their own garage, completely outwardly looking in absolute pristine condition, polished and everything.
Which ones were they?
They were Centurion Mark III, the same as we'd left in Korea. But when you lifted the engine covers up, there was nothing there, and some were without engines, and some were without gearboxes. And 75% of the vehicles that we took over, supposedly to join the occupation troops, were immobile. And it was an absolute shambles.
Okay, whose fault was this?
Well, it could only have been the fault of the Remy inspector at the, on the day, because the vehicle should have been inspected for roadworthiness and battleworthiness before, long before ever we got there. And it was down to the Remy and the regimental colonel, commander and officer.
Now, how did you set about putting this right? I mean, that must have been a big...
Well, it was a major job. We had to work like mad to get the vehicles up to scratch. Bearing in mind, as soon as ever we were only given a very short time before we were to be inspected to see if we were fit for the job, which our colonel considered an absolute insult, inasmuch as the brigadier that the 7th Armour Brigade we were in, the brigade commander insisted that we had a Part 2 inspection, which included everything, right down to the man's boots. And I can recall vividly our colonel, who was a titled man, Sir Charles Lowther, and a little stubby man he was, and he marched onto the square to meet, the brigadier. He was on the square, and the brigadier arrived in his car, and Sir Charles marched up to him and saluted him with the wrong hand. And that was about the biggest insult you could give anybody. And I think he was called over the coals for it, and he wanted to know why. They wanted to know why. But after that, the brigadier just got in. He literally walked down the line of men, got back in his car and drove away. And we never had any bother from him after.
And what had you done to get them? I mean, were you able to get them in good condition?
Well, yeah, we got them back roadworthy, yeah.
Was that a lot of work for you?
Yeah, as vehicle mechanics, it was a hell of a lot of work. Bearing in mind, by this time, all us vehicle mechanics that were badged to the 8th Hussars all the time we were in career and all the time to our service, we had all been compulsorily transferred into Remy.
Now tell me about that. What?
Well, that was the biggest mistake the Army ever made. And the exercises, they're now going back the other way again.
So that's the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, were you in a particular part of them, or were you just attached still to the...
Well, we were still attached to the our same regiment. Apart from promotion, it didn't affect us at all, apart from the fact that we changed our cap badge.
How did you react to changing cap badge? I can imagine
it was... Well, it was horrendous, really. It was very, very disappointing to a lot of us. And it's one of the main reasons I didn't stay in the Army.
Why did you feel so bad about it? Talk to me about it.
I suppose, on hindsight, we were given we weren't told what would happen to us, what could happen to us, or the advantages or disadvantages. The advantages were, obviously, there was more promotion. I was made a sergeant overnight. I'd previously gone to and got my second class trade test. I got that in career by default, really, because
what did rank was that then?
The rank with it.
You were Lance Corporal.
I was Lance Corporal, then I was made a full corporal.
In career?
No, I think I got full second stripe on the way back.
But now you were made a sergeant. So weren't you pleased about that? Or?
Well, yeah, on promotion wise, yes, you were. But you had not a lot of information was given to us. You had the feeling that once you were in Remy, you could go anywhere. And having served your time and elected to join a cavalry regiment or a tank regiment, you could have been sent to an infantry regiment, just looking after lorries and motorbikes, basically, which didn't go down very well with a lot of us. We wanted to be heavy engineers, really, which we were.
You liked the challenge of the tanks?
Well, yeah, it was good. Yeah. And I should have said previously when we were talking about our time in Korea, we, as vehicle mechanics or gunfitters or whatever, were, if a member of the crew went sick, they would come to the fitters and say, anybody want to drive a tank for the day? And we were the relief drivers or the relief gunners.
Now, tell us a bit about that. I mean, we'll drop that in now, I think.
Well, it didn't entail a lot, in as much as you just took over where the driver went, if he had to go and have a tooth out or something, which everybody did at some stage or other in their service, had to have a day off sick. It's like any walk of life.
And would you be a driver or a gunner when you
well,
did it?
Well, I would be, being a vehicle mechanic, I would be a driver. But a gunfitter would be a gunner.
And what was it like driving a Centurion?
Well, it's like everything else. You get used to it. We obviously weren't as good drivers as the regular ones because we didn't do so much of it. Certainly not over rough terrain. We were amateurs, basically.
And what was it like driving it? What were the controls you had?
The controls we had, well, you had an accelerator, you had a clutch, and you had a brake, but you steered with sticks.
Tillers,
yeah.
Was that easy to get used to, or?
Well, yeah. Once you've done it, it's like riding a bike. If you had to repair a tank, invariably you'd take it down the road a little way and just make sure it did run and work properly.
Had you had any formal tank driving training?
Oh, yes. In our initial training at Catterick, when we joined, we were all given the sort of same, well, the vehicle people that were destined to be vehicle mechanics did a driver's maintenance course. And gunners likewise did a gunnery course.
So you'd done the driving?
We'd done the driving. We've been taught to drive, yeah.
Now, so back into... So what's happening in Lüneburg Heath then when you get there? What are you actually doing? Big job getting ready for the inspection.
Big job getting ready for inspection. We then had to take over our turn on doing border control.
Now tell me about that.
Well, border control consisted basically we didn't use the tanks. We used to use the reconnaissance vehicles, scout cars and armored cars. And you'd take over a section of the Russian British zone, a Russian zone border, and you patrolled it for.
So tell me about the patrols. What was a typical patrol? Which arm were you in, a scout car or an armored car? Or are they the same? I'm never
well,
sure.
Yeah,
they're
the same. One's got a gun and one hasn't, basically.
And which were you in?
Well, there again, we used to go. A troop of armored cars would go out as a patrol, but you would always take a couple of fitters and a wireless operator and a wireless mechanic with you. So we went out with our own vehicle. And if you had a section of border to patrol, you stay in the middle. So for argument's sake, 6 miles either side of it was your area of patrol before you joined up with the next person down the other end of the line. So we'd stay in the middle. And perhaps stay there all day and not do nothing. But if somebody broke down, well, you'd get a phone call on the wireless and off you had to go.
And did anything ever happen while you were doing border patrol?
As regards incidents with the Russians,
you mean? Or anything that, you know, just that you remember?
No, I can't really recall anything that's worthy of remembering, really.
So what else were you doing? Border patrols?
One thing I can recall doing was taking some tanks to Hamburg for, it would be, the I can't recall whether the Queen was, whether King George VI had died then or not, but it could have been. It was certainly a birthday celebration, and we took tanks through Hamburg.
What, as a parade? Or
as a parade.
What do you remember of that?
Well, that was there again. That was good fun. You've got to remember that we didn't actually, we only went there to support and make sure that the things went on the morning that they were supposed to go.
So you wouldn't go on the tanks?
We wouldn't go on the tanks, no, we'd watch. That was good fun, I suppose. You went out and had a few beers in the evening. And
what were the, what was the nightlife like in, well, Lüneburg or Hamburg, or, you know, in Germany? What would you do in the evenings?
There was a pretty good naffy club in Lüneburg.
What was that like? Can you describe it? What did it offer?
Well, it offered anything that any club would offer. Beer, food, whatever you. But I can't recall what we did. We weren't in Hamburg very long. We just put them back, tanks back on the transporters and drove back again. Bearing in mind that Lüneburg, from Lüneburg to Hamburg, is a very short distance.
So what would you do in the, what would you, did you go into the clubs and pubs in Lüneburg? Or?
Yeah, yeah.
And what were they like?
Well, you got to, it's some pubs were sort of anti-British. Others, you would fraternise. All right, the days of fraternisation had long gone, but you did get to know and to learn, or get to your local people.
And generally, how did you get on with the Germans?
By and large, pretty good. Yeah, we never had a lot of bother, not to my knowledge.
So you didn't, you just didn't go to the anti-British pubs?
Well, no, you steered clear when you knew that there could possibly be a bit of a scrap that night, or any night for that matter.
And how'd you get on with the other units? Because there can be trouble with other regiments.
Well, yes. I can't recall who was in Lüneburg at the same time as us. But there was just up above where we were in Lüneburg was the district, I suppose it's now turned into the district airport, and the RAF were resident there, and we had the choice of using their club if we wanted to, or their mess, and they always used to have bingo two or three nights a week, you know.
So you get on, you go there?
Yeah, you go there occasionally. But That was all right.
So what happens next then?
Well, then I'm getting close to. I then went on a first class vehicle mechanics trade test.
Now tell me about that.
Well, I went to that was in Duisburg, just outside of Düsseldorf, and you did about a 10-week course, and we were then converted to diesel engines. Bearing in mind that the Centurion had a petrol engine, we were then converted to diesel fitters. And
now, was this a big? I mean, did you know most of it already? Was it sort of revision, or was it new stuff? You were
well, the diesel part of it was certainly new, but the remainder of it, once you got past the Otto cycle part of mechanical engineering, it's all the same, isn't it? You know, suck, squeeze, bang, blow job, and that's it. It's just an alteration of the theme, basically.
So what happened when you passed it then?
I passed it, and I was a first-class vehicle mechanic. And I got back, and then I was promoted to sergeant.
So that's when you got promoted?
Yeah.
Now, what was the sergeant's mess like? What did it mean, being a sergeant? What was it?
Well, it was a good club. A good sergeant's mess centres around a good RSM. If you've got a bad RSM, you've got a bad mess. And we were fortunate in as much as we had a good RSM, who, as I said earlier, was an Irish Guards original. Originally, he was an Irish Guardsman who was in the Guards Armoured Division during the war. And he was a good man. A lot of people... Well, by and large, he was a good man. We used to go out on schemes out on the moor quite a lot.
And what were the schemes like?
Well, they were pretty boring to us, because bearing in mind that we just come out of active service and we knew what we were trying to know what we were doing. But the brigadier of the day of 7th Armour Brigade tried to pull us down as far as ever he could. I suppose it was tactical, really. He didn't want one regiment in his brigade better than another, so he used to, in all intents and purposes, tell us we didn't know what we were doing. And to go back to Roy Valance and my relation with Roy Valance, the biggest sin that a soldier can do in the army is to lose his paybook and his identification documents. And I did this on a scheme in Lunenburg. And I went to Roy and told him what I'd done. He said, "Don't worry, Doug." Well, I don't suppose he called me Doug, but he said, "Don't worry." And 2 days afterwards, a new paybook arrived, and nobody knew anything about it. Not to this day, they don't think knew that I had two paybooks. And when we pulled our tent down, I found the original. And I think I'm perhaps unique in as much as I've still got two paybooks. Those are still in the house here somewhere now. And that was Roy Valance.
Very supportive, then.
He was. He could have thrown the book at me, and my feet wouldn't have touched the ground. I should have been before the colonel. And
what rank was he then?
He was a squadron sergeant major.
Now, anything else about your time in Germany? Because I know it's coming up to when you leave, but anything else you remember?
We had a fair... We lost a lot of leave entitlement when we were in Korea, so we did catch up quite well on our leave sessions, and I can remember coming home quite often. And one of the nicest trips that you could do by train was from the troop train used to leave Hamburg at about 9 o'clock in the morning. He'd pick us up and he'd come to Lunenburg, and we'd get on in Lunenburg, and he'd go from Lunenburg to Hanover right across the Dutch border into Holland. And it used to take all day, that trip, to get the night ferry out of the Hook of Holland to Harwich. And it was the most beautiful day. On a nice bright day, it was a lovely train journey. The train was never full. There was bags of room. There was a restaurant car and everything on there. And it was good. I should never forget that journey. It was one of the nicest journeys ever I'd experienced on the train.
So you get back to...
You'd get to the Hook of Holland in the evening, get on the ferry, and then you'd finish up in Harwich the following morning.